It is your week in review, and tonight we've got a ton to get to, including the fallout from the WWE 2020 draft, Daniel Bryan making his return, the New Day officially being split up, Roman Reigns continues to just get better as a heel, and so much more. Let's not waste any time. Let's get everything started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for your flagship show of the week, which is your week in review. We've got a ton to get to, my God, and I just finished watching SmackDown before I record this, and yes, we were supposed to have a co-host, but that individual couldn't make it, no problem. We will reschedule them for this coming preview of Hell in a Cell this coming Saturday. I think you'll like the co-host, very familiar with this individual, so that will be on Saturday for the official Hell in a Cell preview and prediction show. And if you're not sure who it is, I'll give you a big clue. Well, we used to have a running joke about how many times we had preview and prediction shows just by chance. So there is your big clue for those that have been listeners of the show for a while. But if you haven't, well, welcome. Thank you so much for making me a part of your day or night. And this is all about wrestling. We love wrestling here, and that's what we talk about mostly. We occasionally talk about some other topics, but it's generally wrestling, and we are here to hopefully give you a perspective that maybe you didn't have, maybe you completely disagree with, or maybe you totally agree with us. I've had really all walks of life listen to this show, and whatever perspective or whatever place you may be coming from, welcome. And this is a show that has run, my God, probably six times a week, especially on pay-per-view weeks. And this coming weekend, a week from now, will be the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And there's a ton of stuff to get to. I think it's going to be a really good show. And I don't just mean that because I love WWE. I mean it because I think there's some big things that can happen at that show. And we'll get to that preview and prediction on 6 days from now, next Saturday. So, but by the way, review show will be on Monday with the Botch Guy. So that is going to be a hell of a show. I may even push it to Tuesday. I'm not really sure yet because I know he records on Mondays. I don't watch Raw on Mondays. So we may be doing a Tuesday night Raw / Hell in a Cell review. So that could be coming. I'll have to work out the finer details, but it may be anywhere from Sunday night to Tuesday night, because I could see us doing a show Sunday or Monday or Tuesday. So I promise one of those days. I don't mean to be facetious about it or really vague about it, but that's the truth. I mean, sometimes we have life come up and trying to iron out the details is not always the easiest thing. So nonetheless, if you haven't subscribed to the Botch Guy, what are you waiting for? Head on over to YouTube, subscribe to him, check him out, because he is one of the fastest growing wrestling channels on YouTube, period. And it's very easy to see why. He's very energetic, very just magnetic on the screen. You just want to hear what he has to say. He doesn't cuss and swear, and he's just very forthright about his opinions about what may ever may be going on. And it's only like a minute or two video usually, and really highly recommend the Botch Guy. So he will be joining us again for the Hell in a Cell review coming up next weekend. So definitely when it's a pay-per-view weekend, it's a busy weekend for myself and obviously any other wrestling podcaster and or YouTube wrestling channel. So anyway, guys, thanks again for popping on, and we're going to get to voicemails in just a minute. But first, I want to talk quickly about WWE rivalries that Anthony DeMarco did this past Friday, and he covered the Shield versus Evolution. Really a rivalry I don't want to say I forgot, but I haven't thought about consciously in a long time, that took place in 2014. 6 years ago. Isn't that crazy? 6 years ago was the Yes Movement, but he covered it very well. And the part that I liked is the whole evolution he brought out, no pun intended, about the babyface turn of the Shield. And that took place the night after WrestleMania, when after WrestleMania 30, when Daniel Bryan overcame Triple H, overcame Batista and Randy Orton in the main event of WrestleMania. As you all remember, if you're a recent wrestling fan over the last 6 to 10 years, I say recent, I guess it's all perspective, but then you remember that moment. WrestleMania 30 is one of the greatest stories of all time, and it comes to fans truly showing their power of who can be in the main event, even though Daniel Bryan clearly was not. We all know the story, but having Randy Orton and Batista beat down Daniel Bryan the night after WrestleMania, Triple H says that you're going to face me in a championship match, and then bam, Shield comes out. Really, you know, he does a great job of explaining how and why this happens, and really takes you back. I mean, he includes audio. That's always fun, right? Instead of just hearing the co-host and the host's voice, it's always about listening to the real audio that matters, and that is, to me, the wrestling, right? Like, when I do nostalgia shows, I try to put in the actual audio from that moment in time. I think it really helps capture what we're feeling, and it can bring you back to what you're feeling. So I'd really recommend you check it out. My take on it is, now, I mean, obviously did a great job, but the evolution in the Shield, again, it really was a turning point in the Shield's career. Yes, from heel to babyface, even though they have kind of been teetering on babyface to begin with, and just really had to get over that hump and pass the finish line. This really did it the night after WrestleMania, and no hotter crowd, of course, than the night after WrestleMania crowd, except this year, to do something big. And Daniel Bryan on fire, getting beat down but saved by the Shield, the Hounds of Justice. Haven't heard that in a while, right? Until Anthony talked about it. The Hounds of Justice. That is a phrase I haven't heard in quite a while. So really, really recommend you guys check that out if you haven't already. It's the WWE Rivalries, the Shield versus Evolution, that took place, he did it on Friday, but this actual program took place in 2014. So just wanted to give my quick take on it and really give you my thoughts on, you know, what that meant, that moment in time meant, that specific moment. Of course, he talks about many other in programs and moments that they had throughout their course of their rivalry, but definitely worth listening to. So, alrighty, well, let's get to voicemails, and then we're going to talk all about this week in WWE. There's so much to get to, guys. There's really, I mean, I have a full page of notes, like bullet points. So this could be a lengthier show than normal when I do solo shows. Of course, when I have a co-host, it usually pulls around 2 hours, but this could be a little bit longer than normal, but that could be a good thing or bad thing, depending on whether you like long-form audio. So let's get to the voicemails, and then we're going to get to your week in review.
Good morning. I like that you said get credit. It's Steel Will from Wichita, Kansas. And I think they should bring back Sting, Larry Zbyszko, Iceman King Possum. They could be like a broadcaster or WWE or NXT. That's what's on. WWE is number one. NXT is number one. Yeah, I like that. You say you like that idea that I had. That was a good idea. Thank you for that, man. With a super champion or universal super champion with Roman Reigns, the big dog, SmackDown, WWE, and Drew McIntyre, Raw, WWE, and Adam Cole of the NXT. That would be a good match if I think about it. And I don't know why they don't hook back up R-Truth and his wife Carmella. Why they got them on different shows, like different brands, like Carmella, she on SmackDown, WWE. And then you got R-Truth. He's on Raw, WWE. Make it make sense. All right, thank you. WWE podcast is number one. And the host that hosts the WWE podcast is number one.
Hey, thanks so much for calling in, man. Really appreciate the compliments. And yeah, we're trying to get to number one. I'm glad that you think we are, and that is certainly our goal. So thank you very much. And look, the R-Truth deal and how he split with Carmella, I'm not surprised. WWE made it very clear with their vignettes that Carmella did that she's done being a lapdog for somebody else. She's done playing second fiddle to somebody. She's trying to really carve her own career. She's trying to find her own way. And the women's division, I mean, could use a little bit of a refresh. And when Carmella was SmackDown Women's Champion, I really enjoyed that. I think it was an underrated run that she had, and she was on a good winning streak. And then they kind of, after she lost it, she kind of relegated to the comedy role with R-Truth, and it worked for a little while. Her and Truth had some on-air chemistry, and I enjoyed it. What I think is this: I think Carmella does deserve more than just R-Truth's sidekick. I think she does deserve a run because she's proven she can do it. She has done it in the past with the women's championship. And I think, again, her run was very underrated. And I think there's another run in her at some point. I don't need James Ellsworth to be involved with her at any point either. I want her to rid herself of any male component. I mean that. I want her to be on her own. Show that she can stand on her own 2 feet and doesn't need assistance for it. And you can still be a heel and do that. You don't always have to have backup to be an effective heel. So no James Ellsworth, no R-Truth, no comedy, just get serious. And it seems as if, based on her vignettes, that she is indeed going to do that. Now, we haven't seen that materialize yet on SmackDown. So we'll see if the rubber meets the road, as they say, right? Let's see where they go with this. I don't have a whole lot of faith with WWE vignettes. Think about the vignettes that you thought were going to be a big deal, and they were nothing more than just vignettes. And what am I talking about? Well, let's look at Liv Morgan. Remember her? When she interrupted the whole Lana and Lashley wedding and was revealed to be Lana's lover, that went absolutely nowhere, and it was just a Vince one-off to spike a rating or to get people talking, that went seriously nowhere. So that really is, there's one example. EC3. Is another example, literally a vignette that went nowhere. I mean, there are probably other examples, but those are the most recent that come to mind. Vignettes don't always equal success, but they're a very effective way, and I think an underutilized way at times, to build talent before they even make their debut. I think it's a way to showcase them in the way that you want to, because you can control the editing and the production, and it builds anticipation. Vignettes are, I think, a really awesome way. And so Carmella got the same treatment, and we didn't know who this mystery woman was, even though there were lots of speculation and correct speculation among fans that it was Carmella, who was the blonde in that particular vignette. I mean, even Lana, I know, had vignettes before she returned, and she was like a ballroom dancer that wore like a blue, long blue dress. And then Lana said so many iterations of herself, which to me the best was the original with Rusev. And she has just kind of gone up, down, all around. And it, to me, isn't a great promo. I'm not excited. Lana doesn't excite me at all. Not at all. And I don't mean in a, oh my God, she's so pretty way. I mean in like a professional wrestling way. She does not excite me. In fact, the way she speaks is just, and I don't mean in a heel heat way either. Like, oh, it's great heel heat. I can't wait to see someone whoop her ass. No. Like, I just don't want Lana on my screen at all. And I'm not saying WWE should fire her, but I don't like this iteration of Lana. The best was the first, with Rusev coming in, and she was this nasty, just business associate of Rusev. And she came out in those tight dresses, and it was great. Loved it. So, I don't know. Carmella, to answer your long question short here, I think that for R-Truth as well, who's a really good talent, R-Truth is going to be a guy that is forever WWE's comedy segment, comedy relief. I unfortunately don't ever see an R-Truth championship run beyond the 24/7 championship, which means as much as the WWE championship that you buy off WWE.com. That's how much that championship means. It means nothing. It's not even fun to watch anymore, I don't think. The championship is dead, gone, and just buried. So R-Truth, I think, deserves more. I think he's a character that I think is a very genuine guy. And if you don't or haven't seen his documentary on the WWE Network, really see it. I saw it a few months ago, and it really just opened your eyes into his past, where he came from, the struggles he's gone through, and everything else, all the people that helped him along the way. The R-Truth documentary, go watch it on the network, because it does really shine light on a guy that has been very one-dimensional in the WWE, of just being set in the role of comedy relief. It really adds depth to him and makes you root for the character even more when you see him on TV. So, yeah, okay, that was a really long answer. But I haven't really talked about R-Truth and Carmella much on the show, so there's that. Okay, next voicemail.
Hi, Matt. This is Sean. I've been watching it for the past few months. I'm new to the podcast. I enjoyed the show. I love to listen in all the time. I just have a idea for the wrestling nostalgia. I think it'd be a good idea to have Stephanie McMahon from back in the Attitude area and actually talk about the funny moments of Stephanie McMahon, how The Rock and Trish Jericho always made fun of her and always embarrassed her all the time. I think that would be a good show. That's all I have.
Hey, Sean. I think it was Sean. Almost positive. It's not Sean, or I thought I heard Shay or Sean. So one of the two I know is right. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being a new listener. Very much appreciated. I hope you enjoy this show for many years to come, because we're not going anywhere. We will be here for many years, I hope. So, yeah, the suggestion for wrestling nostalgia, I get a lot of them. That's not a bad one. I haven't ever really thought about that. The whole Chris Jericho and Rock taking down Stephanie McMahon. And yes, it's superficial on the surface, but I will say there's a lot more to that, because it was a time in which Stephanie McMahon would actually put herself on the block to get chopped up at this for the sacrifice of the greater good. And I don't mean a pun on Seth Rollins' career, on his his old character. What I mean is that Stephanie McMahon would actually be the butt of a joke, which never happens now. Never. If it does, it's WrestleMania at a special moment as an accident. And you may be saying, what are you talking about, an accident? Well, remember when Roman Reigns faced Triple H at WrestleMania and he accidentally speared Stephanie instead of on purpose? Because I guess they're trying to write it off as, well, he can't hit her on purpose. She's a woman. Yeah, well, so when it happens on purpose, it is, I honestly don't even know the last time Stephanie McMahon got her ass beat and lost on purpose. So, yeah, for her to be the butt of a joke, I remember them talking about when she got her breast enhancement. They put a side-by-side up of Stephanie McMahon, like, from one week to the next or whatever it was. And we had Jericho talk about how, my, our little princess has sure grown over the last, she might have even said year. It really might have been a year. So it wasn't week to week, but it was a period of time in which she had the same outfit on, I think. And it was just a side-by-side. So she was more often the butt of a joke than not. And I think Stephanie is an underrated heel, but the problem is today, as great as she is and ear piercing as her voice is, as in just her normal speaking voice as a person, the problem is that everyone looks at the McMahons, like Stephanie and Triple H, as like the holier than thou, up at the altar type of figures, instead of actually using them as the butt of a joke. But we're not in the authority era anymore, thank the Lord. We're not in the authority era, because I think that was just got so tiring, and I'm glad that that is no longer a thing. And the Daniel Bryan era was born out of that, so there's something positive there. And Seth Rollins was born from that, among others. So certainly the good. I mean, yes, we also had the Shield. So when you look at that, there is definitely some positives, but it felt like just a droning on of every week. But Stephanie McMahon being the butt of a joke to The Rock and Jericho, I love that suggestion. That's a good one. I will put that in my bank. Thanks so much, Sean or Shay. One of them, I promise. And if you guys want to know, if you're listening to this and saying, hey, how the hell do I call in? How do I be a part of the show? Easy. You have two options. You can email the show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and you can send us a voicemail through that method, or you can call the show directly at 518-952-0247. And you get your show, or get your voice on the show. You can leave a voicemail up to 3 minutes. It does cut you off exactly at 3 minutes. So if you try to go over, it'll cut you off mid-sentence. But it is a great way to get voices on the show, see what the listeners actually think. And that's how you do it. It's 518-952-0247. And again, this is an unmanned voicemail. Nobody picks up. It just rings, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. And then boom, you go to voicemail and you leave whatever you want. Alrighty. Let's move on, folks. Let's get to the week in review. And speaking of the McMahon, speaking of Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Raw, because are some things that I want to cover that I have some additional things to say about it that I didn't cover in my Raw review. But since SmackDown just occurred, it's the most fresh in my mind. And this is your week in review. I do want to talk about this week and try to focus on just this week. We had the return, the season premiere. The season premiere of SmackDown, of which does not fall on the same week every year. If you notice, sometimes it's the beginning of September, sometimes it's mid-September, end of September, sometimes it's just whenever they decide to make it the season premiere. There's no set date. They just kind of pick it out of thin air. Like, I can guarantee you next year will not be the third week of October that they will be doing the season premiere. But in order to kick this off, we got the return of Stephanie McMahon and Triple H in the ring. Again, nightmares going back to the Authority era, but we got them out there, and in a very, very scripted, controlled, corporate way, they welcomed us to the season premiere of SmackDown. Again, if anybody has any worries or any confusion about what the company does whenever they feel like they need to have a ratings boost, have no fear, a McMahon is here. That is what they do whenever they have a problem with ratings. They spike it by trying to put a McMahon on. And look, I don't think it's incorrect in terms of numbers when a McMahon is on that the ratings minute by minute do in fact probably go up. But my problem with their cure-all sometimes of putting a McMahon on TV when the ratings are down is it's a very short-term solution for a long-term problem. Shane McMahon comes back for Raw Underground. Oh, we'll get to that considering it's canceled. Don't worry, we're going to cover that. So we have Stephanie McMahon come back to occasionally make her face on SmackDown. She actually even made a women's championship match a couple of months back. And now we get Triple H and Stephanie McMahon back for the season premiere of SmackDown. So do not fear whenever there is a ratings dive or they feel like they need to make it feel bigger, a McMahon will show their face. And again, I can't dispute the numbers because I'm sure that there's evidence to support their argument that when a ratings drop happens, they need to put a McMahon on TV. But it's such a Band-Aid for the problem. But anyway, so they came out and here's the big problem I have with it. Not only is it very robotic and corporate, especially Triple H's lines. I mean, they were just such a written. They're so written. No way Triple H actually speaks like that. I mean, I've heard him speak 1,000 times, and Triple H does not talk like that. So, what I didn't like about this the most, at the beginning of it anyway, was having all of the wrestlers standing on stage, like good little girls and boys. For the big bad mom and dad to stand in the ring and lecture them about what's going on tonight. I've never liked it on a live, especially when it's live in front of true fans. Never liked it. I never liked it unless it was an absolutely special circumstance. The only time I can remember ever liking it, beyond the tribute shows when someone dies, of course, Eddie Guerrero, I remember the absolute most. And and his anniversary of his passing, which is November 13th, and we'll do a special little show down the line for that in just about a month. But outside of the tribute shows like Owen Hart and Chris Benoit, all those shows I'm not a fan of. And the only time outside of those tribute shows was when Stone Cold got fired by Vince McMahon after he didn't award a new WWF champion at, was it Breakdown? No, Breakdown's when he lost it. I can't remember what pay-per-view it was, but when Vince McMahon forced Stone Cold to be referee and award someone the WWF championship that he just screwed him out of, and he fired Austin, and Vince stood in the ring and said, no one crosses the boss, right? And it was just, he made an example of Stone Cold. Outside of that, I mean, I really can't remember another time in which I like when everyone, the entire locker room comes out, because you have people who are supposed to be in these heated rivalries standing there because they're told to by management. Since when do the wrestlers actually adhere to management, right? Like, when are they, aren't we supposed to feel like anything can happen at any time and there's rebellious stars out there? Well, if they're so rebellious, why are they standing there with their hands folded like they're about to walk in single file to school and sit down and say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and raise your hand when you have a question? That's the way it feels, because mom and dad are there. I really, really, really don't like this version of Stephanie McMahon and Triple H when they're out there like they own the place. And yeah, okay, technically they do, but even back in the 90s they did, and early 2000s they did, and yet they were the ones to be made like look like fools. And that's what made it so satisfying. Instead, you have everyone just bow down to the greatness that is Stephanie McMahon. I can't stand it. And this was a just complete perfect example of when Stephanie comes out and this is the worst iteration of her. Because anyone else hate this? I just can't stand. And not only that, not only is it just terrible for all the storylines, of which Triple H talked about the drama and everything. Like, what are you introducing? We know it's like male infused drama. We know what classification of entertainment we're watching. It just was such from a script. We don't need to have you tell us. It's like I was reading a TV guide and reading what the description of SmackDown is. Of course, it's you know how like when you go to your TV subscriber or TV provider and you look at SmackDown and it gives you like a little description of the show of like what it is. That's what it felt like. It looks like they just took it from Fox of how they describe SmackDown and just read it. That's what Triple H sounded like. Okay, I'm going to get heated real quick. So I'm going to stop. But outside of that nonsensical garbage, what I also don't like when they do, it just kind of like blows your whole shot at once, right? Like you've seen everybody. Okay, well, no, you pick out people. Oh, there's Braun Strowman. Okay, well, you know, there's Liv Morgan and, you know, there's Kevin Owens. And I don't need to see all these people right now, right? Like there's a New Day. I should get excited about wanting to see everybody, not, you know, blow it in 30 seconds. Okay. Well, that's how I felt about the opening of the show. It's just the worst kind of production you can think of. It's just god awful when they do that stuff. But outside of that, when we got past that nonsense, we got Lars Sullivan and Jeff Hardy. And it seems as if WWE is ignoring the Lars Sullivan deal with his whole soliciting a married woman who's a yoga instructor that he's been working with and all this kind of stuff. And I guess they're just going to ignore it. And I mean, whatever. I know that some people are not fans of it, but when you look back at the things that other stars have done that they have let pass, this isn't the worst thing that's ever been done. And I mean, look at, again, Matt Riddle admitting on his Instagram that he had an affair on his wife. And he's under a lawsuit right now, or being filed against a lawsuit with Candy Cartwright, who is the one who's filing the lawsuit against him and WWE for $10 million each, alluding to the fact that he sexually assaulted her in a car after an Evolve show in April of 2018, 2017, something like that. You have what, Jimmy or Jey Uso in trouble with the law a number of times. You have Jeff Hardy. My God, how many times has he had a DUI? You have Roman Reigns fail drug tests. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world to have Lars Sullivan do this. I mean, look, it's not good. I'm not saying I agree with it at all. I think it's terrible. I mean, that's just awful on his part. I am not passing or validating what he did is okay. My point is that there are other stars who have done much worse and are still here and have a number of offenses. So Lars Sullivan does not have a good history with his racist comments and homophobic comments. I mean, that I thought that was it for him, because, I mean, especially in today's day and age, it's like the worst thing you can do. Like, saying a racist comment is worse than shooting someone point blank in cold blood. I mean, like today, it's like the worst thing you can do. So I thought that was it for him. And I think it was a couple of years ago. Obviously, in today's supercharged racially tense environment, I think it would have been much worse. I think it would have been let go instantly. So, but yeah, that surfaced. And then he had an anxiety attack before he actually debuted and he was supposed to be pushed to the moon and he couldn't handle it. And then now this comes out right after he debuts again. So Lars Sullivan, not off to the best start, but he squashed, or I shouldn't say squashed, he beat Jeff Hardy. It doesn't seem that WWE is going to put a championship on him anytime soon, and neither would I, until he proves that he can be a trusted asset to the company. Like a long-term trust, a couple of years. You need to be sure that Lars Sullivan is going to not make you look like a fool and be a public relations nightmare before you put any gold on him so that people can say, look what they've done. They have glorified somebody who has a history of racist comments, has solicited an unmarried woman, or solicited a married woman. So they need to be very careful. Do not put any gold on this man for a long time until he proves for a long period of time, 1 to 2 years, that's long in WWE terms, in pro wrestling terms, that he can be trusted. It's all about trust here. If they put a championship on him before then, I will be floored. Floored. I'm not any championship, any gold. It will be absolutely floored if they do it. So, alrighty. Well, yeah, Jeff Hardy lost. So I think that is pretty telling of where Jeff Hardy stands in WWE's eyes. You know, my, how the mighty have fallen. He was Intercontinental Champion for a number of months. And then, bam, Lars Sullivan hits like a brick wall. And he is relegated to the probably upper mid-card for a while. And we'll see where he goes. But Lars Sullivan is proving to be kind of the Fiend style of selling. And I hope he doesn't become the Fiend selling type of guy where nothing hurts him and he's just constantly getting up and finishers don't do anything. We've seen it. So I guess that kind of builds to maybe what about the Fiend versus Lars Sullivan? I mean, that seems to be a match somehow down the line, maybe in 2021, that we could see. Not for a championship, but for some just pride and for who's the better man. I would assume the Fiend would play the babyface in that scenario. But again, we're probably 6 months away from that. But a program to nonetheless look forward to. Then we got New Day versus Shinsuke Nakamura, Cesaro, and Sheamus. Oh boy. It was New Day's farewell match. You can look at this in one of two ways. You can look at this as, well, you know, it was New Day's. We never feel like we got a proper send-off for New Day. We never, as a fan, you could be saying, I never felt like I got a proper send-off. I never felt like I got a proper goodbye from New Day. And so that's probably WWE's logic here. This is the make good on that. The other side of the argument of this and where I stand, and maybe you don't, and that's cool, but I stand on this. The draft was done. It's dead. It's over. You're drafted. You don't get a special extended stay after school card, okay? You don't get an extracurricular activity card after a draft in a professional sport. And once it's done, it's done. Why are they still here? It should not be a thing. This should not be an excusable reason to have a star or stars on a show in which they are no longer drafted to. This is what I'm talking about. This will not be excused. This will not be even referenced. It's just they write it off as a New Day farewell. I mean, we don't need farewell matches. You know why? Because in a year, everything gets shuffled and nothing's going to matter anyway. And we'll have these people right back on the same shows. And furthermore, WWE doesn't adhere to their own draft rules anyway, which means we're going to see crossovers, we're going to see quarterly invitations, we're going to see wildcard rules, we're going to see explanations of, or lack of explanations of people on their opposing brands for no reason, with no explanation, it just happens. We're going to see trades that happen just because they happen with no explanation of how they're addressed, who makes the trade, who approves them, none of that. None of that's going to even come up. So the fact that we need a farewell for this is, to me, totally unneeded. We could have done a WWE special on this. We could have done a, and you know what? New Day's deserving of it. New Day is deserving of a network special devoted directly to them about their career as New Day and how it started, where it went, what became of it, and how it ended. And make no mistake about it, this is not the end of the New Day. Yes, Big E will go on to have his singles career and likely a very successful one, I think. Even Corey Graves alluded to, if he stops the silliness and the pancakes, he could be a future champion, of which I think he is echoing the sentiment of most fans who are like, hey, can we see a serious Big E? I mean, I do not want to see a gyrating Big E anymore. It just, it's like the New Day have been the same people for 6 years. Nothing has changed. I mean, it's the same pancake throwing. No matter what happens to me, I lose a championship, I get my ass beat, I'm going to come out and throw pancakes. It, to me, Kofi Kingston was an absolute, just a sham to the WWE Championship. He was a sham. Made the championship mean less than when he got it. I mean, I know that many people don't agree with me. Fine. But I will argue until my last breath that Kofi Kingston took away from the WWE Championship more than he added to it. And you can blame it on booking, okay? You can blame it on creative. You can blame it on execution himself. I don't care what you blame it on. The fact of the matter is, him as champion, to me, was not good for the championship. It may have been good for Kofi Kingston, the character, but that's very narrow-minded when you look at the scope of the championship that covers the entire company, of which everyone's supposed to be there to compete for. Okay, I'm getting off on a side tangent, but I don't agree with this match. It was a good match, no question about it. This is a successful team. But Big E got the win, as I thought he would, because he's going to be the focus here moving forward as a singles star, a singles competitor. Hopefully we don't hear him come out next week and say, oh, people at home. I don't need, no, I don't, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with it. Let's move on. Big E doesn't need to do a 180. He can still kind of have the remnants of the New Day on him, as I said in my previous shows. That's fine. I hope he does, because it would make sense that he's still kind of figuring himself out, finding who he is as a character on his own for the first time. That's what I hope happens. And then as every week goes on, every month goes on, the New Day stench goes away. And it finally is just absolved, and he finds out who he is. So, but I did not agree with this match. As good as it was, it didn't need to happen. It just spits in the face of the draft rules, which are completely out the window anyway. I mean, when you look at the plausibility of a lot of those rules, but Okay. Then we get the Street Profits defeating Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode by DQ for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. I don't have a problem with this match per se. I'm not really sure what Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode did to earn this opportunity. I don't understand why they were even afforded an opportunity to get a championship match. I mean, unless I'm totally missing something, and my brain has been scattered the last 2 weeks, so you're probably thinking, what are you talking about? They won a championship number one contender match. If they did, I don't remember that. Okay. I don't think they did. If they didn't, I wouldn't be surprised. It doesn't ring a bell that they even earned an opportunity. And I brought up a point a couple of shows ago, maybe even the last show I did, about how WWE is way, way, way too liberal with their championship matches in general. I'm talking across the board for all belts. 24/7 is a sidebar. It's a joke. It's a KB Toys type of championship. For those of us old, those of you old enough to know that reference, it's a KB Toys championship. But outside of that, the real championships that matter, that actually have value, United States Championship, Intercontinental Championship, both tag team titles, the women's tag team title, the women's championships, and the two big belts on Raw and SmackDown, and even the NXT Championship, to some degree, not as egregious, are all defended way too much and are given away way too much. Championship opportunities are given away all just by asking or attacking a champion. How does this work? Because does WWE think that having championship matches actually boosts interest, actually makes people want to see that see the program more? I would argue no. It doesn't. It doesn't make people want to see it more. They only want to see it more if those two individuals fighting over the championship are characters that that person or people are interested in seeing fight, and they care who wins and who loses, and the championship is icing on the cake. That's what matters. Instead, we've been treated to championship match after championship match with no explanation half the time of how people earn opportunities that just is afforded to them because, we're not even going to bother explaining it. We'll just kind of put it on the show and it'll speak for itself and people will forget about it. They'll just get interested in the match. No, I care. I care about how people earn these championship opportunities because if these people, individuals, wrestlers, are not here for those championships, then what the hell are they here for? So if they're here for just entertaining and just playing around, I think that's a terrible excuse. If they're here to truly compete for these championships, as we're all supposed to believe, well, then make me actually care about the championships that those people who are currently holding them have. Make me care about those championships. Add value to those championships. You know how you don't add value? You don't add value by giving the opportunity away every single week. Because it feels like anyone can be the champion. Anyone can do it. That's why I have been vehemently against people or babyface champions that come out, especially when they first win the championship, and make the declaration that they're going to be a fighting champion. Anybody wants to step up can get a shot at this. Why? Wait a minute. It's such a superficial, not thought through line or logic. Because you may say, well, that's what a fighting champion should be. Somebody that everyone likes. You put it up for anybody that wants a shot. Instead of putting the tail between your legs and saying, no, you have to earn this. Well, to me, you can still be a babyface champion and make the person who's after you, even if they're a heel, earn it. You can do it in a way that's doesn't look like you're trying to evade them. You can say things and do things in creative. You just have to, get creative. Sometimes the title that they are is often what they're not. That makes sense. I don't understand the need for Vince to always make the declaration for a babyface champion. Always. You don't think I'm right? Go back to when Seth Rollins won the championship from Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Go back to most recently when Drew McIntyre won the championship from none other than Brock Lesnar at this past year's WrestleMania. Go back and look. Every major championship win from a babyface, especially when they win it on a big stage, they will always talk about being a fighting champion, being here all the time, wanting to face people, wanting to challenge themselves, wanting to... Stop it. Stop it. Everybody's got the same speech that Vince just feels is the right thing to say if you're a person that people like. In fact, it makes you look stupid. You know why it makes you look stupid? It's because you're the one who scratched and clawed, apparently, we're supposed to believe, and it, to some degree, it may be true, scratch and claw your entire life to get that championship. And now you're just going to give away opportunities? Why? To prove you're a fighting champion? No, because you know what that does? That devalues what you're holding, because now you're telling me that you had to scratch and claw, but you're going to allow anyone to come up to you and you'll give them an opportunity. What? No. It makes you look like a fool. It makes you look like an absolute fool. And it kind of makes you look a little soft, too. That you can just be easily wooed into giving somebody an opportunity for the championship that you apparently worked your entire life for. Instead of respecting the championship. It's about the championship. Yes, the characters are important. And to me, they are extremely important and often overlooked in terms of depth. But if there's no value in the championships that people are after, well, then what are we fighting for? Props? Right? I mean, they're essentially props. Otherwise, okay, I think I've gone way, 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 way off the deep end. All right, let's move on because I'm gonna go in circles. I don't know, I'm in like a ranting mood. I'm not in a bad mood. I'm just in like a very passionate wrestling mood. So careful. But okay, moving on here. Daniel Bryan makes his return. That's a good thing, right? It's nice to see Daniel Bryan. His wife and daughter are in the WWE Thunderdome, right? Like, everybody has to say Thunderdome with like a bass in their voice too, don't they? Even Daniel Bryan couldn't escape the creative or Vince McMahon need to. Every time you say Thunderdome, you can't just say Thunderdome, just the way I said it. You have to say the Thunderdome, like make actual thunder noises with your voice. That's what it seems like. It's ridiculous. Oh God, all right. I need to I need to relax tonight. Daniel Bryan, though, did come out, and he was interrupted by Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins, who is now just the Messiah, has no followers. So I don't know. He's just a Messiah to, I don't know, the imaginary disciples that he has. But he came out, and it was nice to see Seth Rollins get a little bit of a wardrobe change. He wore shoes with no socks. That was pretty funny. Anybody else catch that? He's got, like, these expensive dress shoes on, but no socks. It was just nothing. That was really, really funny. I don't know why I found that hilarious. He also kind of redid his hair in a different way. So those little changes I like, because it's a symbol and a sign to the fans that, hey, yeah, like, I'm on a new brand. It's time for a new beginning. And that's the message that we're supposed to receive. Seth Rollins then offers an olive branch to Daniel Bryan about either you're on the right side of history or you're on the wrong side of history. And Daniel Bryan refuses, I mean, as expected, and as he should. And they get into a fight, and Daniel Bryan ends up getting beat down by Seth, who then retreats. And then we got a... Oh, God, I don't want to say this. It hurts me. It hurts my soul to say this. Here's the funny part. Is Dominic and Rey come out as Seth is backing up the ramp because Daniel Bryan started to get an advantage on him. And Daniel Bryan looks really good. I mean, he's still super quick in the ring. Really excited to see what Daniel Bryan has got up his sleeve next. I think he's a shot in the arm big time to SmackDown. Rey and Dominic come down. And all I thought was, I literally could hear the collective sigh across the earth from wrestling fans of just this noise. That's what we all felt. It was just a collective sigh of, no, can this die? Just a quick death, please. There's no need nor storyline reason to have this continue. They're on the same brand, but can it please stop? I thought Seth was in the clear that he had interrupted Daniel Bryan, and great, we're going to get a Seth and Daniel Bryan program. I thought, yay, hooray, this is all over. And I was severely mistaken, because Dominic and Rey come out. And if you noticed, and if you didn't notice, please go back and listen to this. It made me infuriated and laugh at the same time. Because as Dominic and Rey come out to corner Seth, WWE pumped in yes chants from the WWE fans. If you don't believe me, go back and listen. WWE actually had the balls to pump in yes chants as Rey and Dominic were cornering Seth Rollins. You could hear it. I was laughing, but enraged at the same time. Because imagine if this was in front of real fans. They would have booed this. They would have booed it. They would have said, we are done. End this now. It just is absolutely infuriating and hilarious at the same time and sad. It is also very sad that they had to do this. But they're loving the fact that they can just control the audience reaction and get exactly the reaction they want. They're in for a rude awakening when fans can come back. Rude awakening. So Dominic and Seth come out, and then Dominic and Rey come out, then Buddy Murphy makes his way out and attacks Seth after he looked like he was going to align with him. And I said, oh my God, please don't. Nope, he didn't. He actually stayed the course, and because I think Murphy's on the ascent right now in a good spot. Murphy's in a very good spot in his career. I'm excited for where he could go here. And Dominic and Rey also beat down Seth, and then Seth retreats, didn't get too much of a beating, and then Buddy Murphy extends an olive branch to Dominic and Rey, both of which refuse. So I will say that made sense. If they had just shook the hand of Buddy Murphy at that moment, I would have been on here cussing. I mean, you would have to be kidding me after everything that Buddy Murphy has done. If you don't remember, he was the one who originally helped Seth gouge out Rey Mysterio's eye, insult his family, attack his son. Just beat down Rey Mysterio and his son mercilessly, I should say, many times. So if they had just gone with, okay, well, cool, he extended his hand, let's, you know, let bygones be bygones. By God, I would have lost my mind, but they actually had the foresight to say, no, this doesn't make sense. As gullible and as good of a guy as Rey Mysterio comes across on camera, that would have made him look like a total a-hole. So good that didn't happen. All right. I'm not going to go down the whole SmackDown list, but another thing on SmackDown I wanted to touch on, a positive thing that I'm not going to rant on, Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. So I'm going to get to the main event here. I'll just talk about it. Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman had, a really good match. I mean, it's better than I expected. I guess Braun Strowman is back in the babyface role by default. I mean, I guess since he went to Raw Underground, dominated, left, and came back to SmackDown after The Fiend beat him, he's a babyface, I think. We haven't heard much from him, so he's just kind of in the limbo. I don't know if WWE knows what to do with him. They're just kind of in a wait-and-see approach. I guess he's a babyface by default facing Roman Reigns, but we'll have to see. Again, he's in limbo. He's in purgatory, so to speak. So we get this match again. Good match. I like that Roman Reigns took off the tactical vest. It's really, really refreshing, and he has certainly got himself in amazing shape. So kudos to Roman Reigns. His teeth sometimes are still very distracting because they're so damn white. I mean, he could have made it at least look a little bit more natural instead of just like this blazing, blinding white, because nobody's teeth are truly that white naturally. So I have no problem with Roman Reigns doing his teeth. I mean, they're less distracting week by week, but they're still like, okay, what is it? Like, I don't know. I'm not complaining about it. He does what he does to himself and whatever. But so after the match, though, this is where things took off for the better. Like, I really, again, the match was good. It's fine. Good match. Braun Strowman gets beat. And then Jey Uso comes out. He's watching the match intently. We didn't get one of these, you know, flopping, kind of like lingo speak promo from Jay. We didn't get the, you know, welcome to the Uso penitentiary. Like, stop it. Like, we don't need your catchphrase for this program. This is not the time to use your catchphrase. Okay. And we got Jey Uso coming out, and, you know, this was probably Jey Uso's best acting to date. It was really good. And Roman Reigns, too, talking about how you're embarrassing our family. The off-mic verbiage from Roman is really kicking ass. This is Roman just being himself, it feels like, about how Jey Uso needs to understand his role and that you're embarrassing our family. This is why I do what I do. And he beat down Braun Strowman with a chair after the match. And said, if I can do this to Braun, what am I going to do to you at Hell in a Cell? That was very telling. And it just seems so real. And Jey Uso punching him in the face after Roman gives him an opportunity to hit him in the back with a chair. He ends up punching him in the face, kick him in the face, and then hit him with a chair a couple of times before management gets involved. And I really don't have any issue with this at all. Because the biggest part, the most impactful part to this was not only Jey Uso's acting, which was really, really good. He had probably his most serious, just dark demeanor that he's had his entire career. And Roman Reigns, after this happened, he Superman punched Jey Uso. But the biggest line for me was, that was your last chance, if you notice at the very end. That was your last chance. There's no turning back. That was go listen. To me, that was like, oh, you know what? That was like blank just got real. And I'm very concerned for, again, in pro wrestling terms, very concerned for Jey Uso as a character at Hell in a Cell. And I mean that in a way that Roman could literally destroy him. And I think it's going to be very, very, it's going to be more uncomfortable than it was at the last pay-per-view. This is going to be brutal. There could be blood. There literally could be blood. I would actually pull out the blade here. I would. If I was WWE, I would pull out the blade. I know it's COVID time. I understand that. But if both men get tested before, look, you can make it happen. Blood should be used. If blood is used, this will take Roman Reigns' character to the next level. because the demeanor and the words that came out of his mouth at the end of SmackDown were some of the best that he's ever had. That's probably the most, and I don't know why it hit me so hard in a good way. That was probably the best that Roman Reigns has ever been in his entire career was this past week on SmackDown in his off mic words. And I don't know why I think I enjoy off mic so much because it's almost like you shouldn't be hearing what you're hearing. And it's like personal. It doesn't feel like part of the script when you hear an off mic conversation. So I don't know, maybe I'm overselling this or maybe not, but maybe let me know what you guys think. I'm interested to hear it. Alrighty. Bayley and Sasha also had a contract signing. Probably the first contract signing that I can remember in recent history in which both participants did not sign. And I'm fine with it because Bayley eventually will sign. I mean, that'd just be ridiculous if she doesn't sign. So next week on SmackDown, Bayley will be either forced to sign or she'll sign on her own or just some wonky whatever. Maybe she'll add a stipulation in there and she'll only sign if whatever she adds to it, Sasha agrees to. So that's a possibility too, but Bayley will eventually sign. I don't think there's any concern about that. Sasha coming out in her, like, I don't know what the heck she was wearing, some kind of like jumpsuit. She likes those just very distracting outfits, doesn't she? They're very distracting. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just very distracting. She doesn't need to be like that, that glamorous, so to speak, that I don't know, maybe I'm just personal taste, but she came out and she cut a good promo on Bayley. I think she cut a good promo, and Bayley said that, you know, I just turned on you before you could turn on me, and that's why you're upset. I would say this, you know, and Sasha's like, no, you are my best friend. I'm upset because you tried to end my career. I mean, yeah, that's true. Like, no, you tried to snap my neck. That's why I'm upset with you. So I think this is going to be a good match. I actually, not to tip my hand, I wouldn't bank on Sasha Banks winning the championship on Sunday. I really wouldn't bank on it. There's a strong chance Bayley retains. I'll just say that. Of course, we have another week of SmackDown to get through. We'll see what comes of that. But if you were going to put a gun to my head right now, I think Bayley retains. So that might change next week. But if you were going to say right now. Alrighty. Well, let's talk a little bit else of what's going on here. Mustafa Ali being revealed as the Retribution leader, of which he did not speak this week. Apparently, he'll speak his truth next week. So that's fine. I mean, they didn't give an explanation as to why he didn't show up last week. But, I mean, I'm not going crazy over it. It's just kind of weird that they advertised it and then just pretended it didn't exist. And this coming week, he's going to explain his actions. He's going to speak his truth. If this group isn't a complete just duplication, a complete plagiarism is the word I was looking for, of the current events in the world, then I don't know what is. Right? They're using phrases like I said, like speaking your truth. Well, when you look at the political environment right now, what do a lot of people on the left side of the aisle talk about? Speaking your truth, right? There's nothing wrong with that. And it's a political phrase that they're using, I think, to whether, I guess, transparently or not, or maybe they're thinking that people don't make the connection or not. I do. But it's interesting when you use the phrase speaking your truth. That's such, I mean, I have a problem with that phrase if you're going to really use it in life. Because if you're speaking your truth, well, there's no such thing as your truth. There's your opinion. There's your life story. There's facts about what happened to you. But there's only one truth, and that's the truth. Like, so what's reality? It's reality versus your made-up world that everyone's supposed to believe is gospel because you believe it's true when it's truly not based on fact. So I have a problem with people using the phrase, my truth, I'm speaking my truth. Well, again, I don't care if you can call it whatever you want. It's still your opinion. People have substituted out the word opinion for fact or for truth when truth is in fact, it's not subjective, right? It's just is what it is. It's fact. Whether you agree or disagree, it's people are trying to bend reality by talking about their truth. That doesn't make sense. That's not a thing. There's only one truth. Okay, I'm going off deep end with a lot of stuff tonight, guys. I don't know. Maybe it's the election season coming up. I don't know. But, let's strap in for that. I don't care what side of the aisle you fall on that, but it's going to be wild. So, anyway. So Mustafa Ali is going to come out and speak his truth. Can't wait to hear that. That phrase is just, ugh. I hate it because it's not a thing. And we're all, anyway, okay. But I'm interested to hear. I'm excited for Mustafa Ali's career on this because this is clearly the biggest thing he's ever done, ever. And I think he has a bright future. I don't think it's with Retribution. Personally, I think his best years will come out of Retribution whenever that storyline dies. I don't know when it is going to. I would assume it's nowhere near its death, considering that they just keep putting this group in the limelight and oftentimes main events and closing Raw. So I don't think that the group of Retribution, whether you love them or hate them, is going anywhere anytime soon. And we'll have to see if Mustafa Ali can come through. You know, maybe he's a complete bust as a leader. Maybe he's not. Maybe he kicks ass. And maybe we're looking at the next really good heel. I think there's a great heel under that somewhere. Underneath all of that, there is a really good heel, I think, sitting there for Mustafa Ali. I hope he taps into that because there's, again, I'm excited for him. As a person, as a career, on every level, I hope he absolutely kills it. I mean, I'm not as stupid as the Retribution angle has been because of just logic and complete misexecution and not paying attention to detail. And all of that has been, this is the best opportunity for Mustafa Ali ever. And if this thing ends up working and we kind of soften on the whole lack of logic, then fine. I hope that happens. I hope we're looking at that scenario. Okay. Moving on down the line here. We also are kind of in a weird scenario with The Fiend. The Fiend and Alexa Bliss and Kevin Owens, who's still kind of involved with Aleister Black. I don't know what the... Kevin Owens is the weirdest part of all of this because he has a KO show. He hasn't done anything significant since WrestleMania. Nothing. It's been 6 months since Kevin Owens has done anything of significance. And then he gets blasted into this Fiend rivalry, but also is still kind of following up on his program with Aleister Black, who after he beat him clean, I thought, okay, well, Kevin Owens beat him clean. Let's move on. And no, Aleister Black still continues. Of which we got no explanation, by the way. Aleister Black decides to not give us any explanation as to what he's doing and why. He just kind of walks around with a band on his head, which looks cool. But I would like some reason. Is that too much to ask? To ask for some kind of reasoning behind why Aleister Black did what he did, attacking Kevin Owens on his show about a month ago? Maybe more by now. And then The Fiend comes out. I know that he attacked Kevin Owens, and Alexa Bliss is now full bore heel with The Fiend. Is really cool. That's such a cool visual. I mean, Alexa Bliss has got that evil smile, the evil eyes. She's just a really good, she's a really good actress in terms of emoting her, what she wants you to feel. And I think she's got a really good jolt back into her career because of this. So we'll have to see where this ends, though. Of course, Alexa Bliss could just kind of fall off the face of the earth after this whole thing, and maybe there's no endgame. I don't think Vince knows the endgame. I have gotten to the point of Vince assuming and really confirming that Vince has no endgame for a lot of storylines. I mean, you want a couple of examples? Anonymous Raw General Manager. Never a payoff to that, although Hornswoggle was, but that was a joke of a wrap-up. I mean, Retribution. I guarantee there's no endgame for that. I will guarantee you that when he started this, again, there's no way to prove this, of course, but when this was initially started and someone said to Vince, what's the endgame for this? Like, where you want to go? What's your destination? Wow, pal, it's about the journey. We'll get to the destination when we get there. This is about taking them on a ride. That's probably what he said. I mean, that's how he looks at it, as it's about the journey and the ride. And you know what it is? He's not wrong. But when you don't know where you're going on your journey, that's the problem. Because maybe you could have taken a right turn when you should have taken a left turn. This is the problem. It is about the journey. But the journey is shaped by the destination. So if you don't know where you're going, you're going to look really sloppy getting there because you don't know where you're going. You're just kind of swerving along the road. So that's how I feel about a lot of things that Vince starts. Like the Retribution storyline that took 8 weeks. 8 weeks, maybe more. I could be wrong. I think I'm about right with 8 weeks, maybe nine, of finally getting something from the message-wise from Retribution. You do something that significant, and they don't speak or do anything for 9 weeks. What? What? I mean, it doesn't make sense when Vince does this kind of stuff. And Raw Underground, same thing. He'd probably say the same thing. Oh, it's not about the destination, pal. That's exactly, I mean, it's the same thing. And what happens to Raw Underground? It goes exactly where the title says it goes, underground. It is gone, dead, and buried. So, and I made a YouTube video on this, which, by the way, go subscribe at youtube.com/thewwepodcast or on Twitter, by the way, at wrestling_audio, if you want to follow me on Twitter, and on Instagram at wwe_podcast. So Raw Underground's dead. And again, I made a YouTube video on this a couple of minutes. And I talked about how WWE cited COVID and the health and safety of their performers as the reason why this is a dead and gone segment. I highly, highly, highly doubt it was COVID. Very much so. You know why I doubt it? Because how many pull-apart brawls has WWE done? Hell, they've done women's battle royals with 20 women in the ring at the same time, right? They have done several multi-person angles. Not just one or two people, like pull-aparts and backstage stuff on a weekly basis. And yet they're citing COVID as the reason. Oh, well, you got people, you know, next to each other. That's like your entire show. That's what you do. And COVID is a very convenient response for, or convenient excuse for why Raw Underground is now gone. Very convenient. Now, again, it may be a small part of it. Small. But I can almost guarantee you that it's just simply because of ratings. And the ratings didn't bear out exactly what WWE hoped it would. They did a test run. It was a pilot. And they don't want to admit defeat. That is the Vince McMahon way. That's the Vince McMahon way. If it wasn't, then why didn't they just cancel it on September 29th or whenever the last episode was and then say, yeah, guys, listen, the COVID thing, right? The COVID thing. That's the reason. Why do you need 3 weeks to tell people that? It had nothing to do with COVID. Let's be honest. There is nothing that would support that. There's no evidence in that. Why would you wait 3 weeks to tell people that? You wouldn't. People would understand, you know, there would have been speculation, but why wait 3 weeks? There's probably conversation back and forth. Should we reboot? Should we continue? What do we do? Well, guess what? COVID's still going on. COVID's a thing. People understand that you shouldn't have a whole lot of people in the same, you know, same area, right? Population density. It's all about that. Well, it's perfect. Let's blame it on COVID. I mean, it's such a Vince McMahon way, and I could be completely wrong, completely off base. I don't think I am. Something that Vince McMahon, I didn't hear a whole lot about the whole Raw Underground and people testing positive, and it created a whole lot of, you know, spreading the virus, and it caused, I didn't hear a whole lot about that at all. Right. I mean, there were some cases in WWE, certainly, and they quarantined and all that. I didn't hear a whole lot of direct relation to those people being involved with Raw Underground and the Raw Underground causing that. And Vince McMahon would certainly supersede ratings if this was such a ratings grab and such a great draw that WWE Vince wouldn't find a way to work around the virus. All right. If Raw Underground was such a success, You would have just separated the people more in the Raw Underground arena, so to speak, or area, underground layer, wherever the hell they were. You would have separated them more, had less people involved. I mean, there's ways to do it. If it was such a successful format and you're just concerned about population density, you could have just modified the format. I mean, so it's no question. It's about bad ratings, period, in social media, people destroying it. So, alrighty. Well, the only other thing is Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre, pull apart brawls. I mean, again, pull apart brawls. We had a Lana women the winning the women's battle royal to face Asuka. I mean, there's a small chance she could win, but I'd be very, very hesitant to think she could do so. But we have the constant pull aparts between Drew and Orton, and it didn't really do a whole lot. It was kind of just the steady as it goes with that whole program. There wasn't a ton of movement. It was just these two like fighting, and Drew is going to always pick a fighter, always want to always try to beat Randy Orton's ass every time he's in the same building. That was his promise. So that didn't, again, it didn't do a whole lot for the program this past Monday. I'd expect things to heat up in a big way and their final go-home show to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view this Sunday. So, alrighty. Well, guys, I think that kind of does it for me. I hope you enjoyed this solo version of the Week in Review. There'll be more co-hosts, I promise, joining me at the end of the week in terms of the Hell in a Cell review or preview, and then the, of course, Hell in a Cell review with the Botch Guy on YouTube. Go subscribe if you haven't already. And while you're at it, why don't you just click that subscribe button to this show? Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It does certainly help us. Call the show and email the show. You guys know the contact information there. And, of course, YouTube, we're on there. Instagram, we're there. And on Twitter, at @wrestling_audio. Kind of rebuilding the audience from scratch there. Very unhappy about that, but it is what it is on that front. Alrighty, well, that is it for me tonight, guys. Tomorrow, I will not be here because it's a Monday, but on Tuesday, of course, will be your Monday Night Raw review, your go-home version of the Monday Night Raw review. So until then, guys, I'll talk to you next time.